Welcome to this Creators interview. Today we have a special guest, Pablo Solon, an activist and social and environmental specialist. And first of all, could you introduce yourself and your work field and your organization?
Well, my name is Pablo Solon. I am the executive director of Fundación Solon. Fundación Solon is on one hand, it's a museum of art. Solon was a very famous muralist, a social muralist in the last century. And we have worked in Fundación Solon for more than two decades in social issues and environmental issues. And also we have dedicated a lot of time to look at issues that have to do with free trade agreements, with climate change, and currently with issues that deal with energy and systemic alternatives.
Thank you for introduction. First of all, we could talk about the situation in Bolivia, in irregular situation, what are the main social and environmental challenges in Bolivia today?
Well, the situation in Bolivia currently is very complex because we have, since the year 2006, a precedent and a process of what we call in Bolivia a process of change. So since the year 2006, we have a government that came out of social movements. And for the first 5-6 years, the process was moving forward. But since the year 2011, I would say the process is clearly moving backwards. So it's a very complex situation because you have a government that comes from social movements, comes from, in some way, from the left. It's a government that speaks a lot about the rights of Mother Earth. We have a law about the rights of Mother Earth. But in practice, what we have now is more extractivist projects, not only in relation to fossil fuels and mining, but also now, for example, in relation to big mega dams, also in relation to the production of ethanol or biofuels. And we have even the threat of increasing more the GMOs. So the contradiction here is that who develops these extractivist projects is not a right-wing government. It is a government that comes from social movements and that has had and even has until now a discourse that is very environmentally friendly. But one thing is what it says and another thing is what they do.
Yeah, I've heard that in the last interviews, and also I have read about the political situation and the political history of Bolivia, how it evolved in I've read about the Vivir Bien and about how it was there was a lot of really good things that were planning to the social planning was really and really good, but then when it had to how to do it, and then it was totally different. And I think it's really interesting to hear about and how because it could have been it can be also to different kind of a social structure than in Western countries, like in Bolivia. So it's really interesting to hear how will the state will be formed in when it comes from the social movements. And, but I think and how what was the how could you what was your suggestions how could the situation be better, how the social movements can be involved in a state level, and how to improve the democracy in Bolivia?
I think that social movements should always remain independent from the government. It doesn't matter if it's a government from the left or a government from the people. Social movements have to have self-determination, self-organization, autonomy, have their own strength and capacity to challenge even a government that has leaders from social movements. That was the mistake in Bolivia. The mistake in Bolivia was to have brought into the government the majority of the main leaders of social movements. So I think that what has happened in Bolivia is that this government that came from some leadership of social movements got captured by the logic of power. Power, state power, has its own logic, and you cannot have a counter power to that logic if social movements are not independent, self-organized, and have relying mainly on developing a strategy that is more based on the commons than on the state. If your logic is based on the state, it's very difficult that you can escape the logic of a state capitalism.
Yeah, that's a really interesting, and how I think that has been really a big problem in many many countries that have when we try to have an alternative to like the neoliberal state power, and then it's really difficult how to do a different kind of a structure in a state level, and, but yeah, I think that is really being it's really difficult question, and I think in Bolivia there has been really that like the relationship between social movements and the state, there has been a really different kind of situations, and it has been different than in many countries. Like in Finland, it's last government was really independent and didn't listen to social movements at all. So it's really always dependent on what kind of a government is in power. Okay, but we could go forward for the deforestation situation in Bolivia. I've read about that, and what is the what is the deforestation situation in Bolivia? What kind of threats there are concerning deforestation?
Well, deforestation is beginning to increase in the past years. In 2016, we almost reached 300,000 hectares of deforestation in that year. And what is a problem is that the proposal of the government, in order to fulfill the commitments in the Paris Agreement, is contradictory to even increase that deforestation. So the plan of the government in the Paris Agreement is to have a deforestation of around 3 million hectares. We think that we are going to accomplish that by the year 2030, which is a tragedy. But the government says that, no worry, we are going to reforest, and we are going to reforest 4.5 million hectares by the year 2030. But in reality, we are reforesting per year not more than 15,000 hectares. So the reality is that we deforest around 300,000, we reforest only 15,000 hectares, and that is being very optimistic. So at the end of this decade and the next one, we are going to lose forests that are primary forests, many jungles, and the main drivers of deforestation now are mainly cattle, livestock, and of course big agribusiness, more linked to soya production, and now to ethanol, biofuels, which is starting in Bolivia since last year.
Yeah, I've been looking at the situation, it's really frightening, and also when I was interviewing the specialist in Paraguay, there the situation has already gone really bad in some areas, that there was one of the, there was only 2% of the some part of the rainforest was there was only 2% left. And so like the Atlantic rainforest, that's really, really terrible. And that, I think that is the threat that can happen in many areas in here and in other countries in Amazon countries. And so what could be the key measures that can be done to prevent the deforestation in Bolivia and other countries?
So the deforestation has to do with a political decision, a will from the state to stop it. If the state, if the government doesn't have that will, then all the other measures will not happen, will not be implemented. So for example, in the case of Bolivia, we should not go to the production of ethanol or biofuels. To go to biofuels and ethanol will increase deforestation. You don't have to do it. Second, the government is promoting the export of meat to China and other Asian countries. We should not to follow that path. If we increase the levels of meat export, we're going to have a situation similar to Paraguay. So we have to not enter this logic of meat export that we see in neighboring countries. We don't have to go to a path of big megadams that are going to deforest thousands of hectares to build huge megadams. instead of doing this, we should promote Bolivia as an agroecologic country that has agroforestry, that promotes ecotourism. So there are other ways to improve the living conditions without going and promoting more and more deforestation.
Yeah, and that is a really good things that you said about, and we would next there would be discussed about how could we about Bolivia's international relations situation, because I think that is also correlated to deforestation in Bolivia and the economic system in general, and how the economic system is affecting Bolivia's situation. Like soy farming and or so all that. So, how much of Bolivia's and other Latin American countries' voices heard in international organizations like WTO, IMF, OECD?
Well, in general, the voices of developing countries, even though they are the majority, are not really taken into account. No? We see it in the WTO, we see it in the UN, and other multilateral and plurilateral organizations. I was ambassador for Bolivia to the UN from 2009 to 2011. And I think you can do some things. For example, Bolivia was able to pursue, and we achieve the several things, like there is a resolution that declares the International Day of Mother Earth. We achieve the declaration of the human right to water. So you can do things. It's not that you can't. Even being a small country like Bolivia, you can do it. If you have a proposal, you have a strategy, a government can do it, but there are also limits. For example, I don't think that you can address problems like climate change by focusing all your efforts in an international agreement like the Paris Agreement or other agreement that can be much, much better. I think that those issues will not be solved at multilateral level in the UN. Those issues have to be solved at local level, from the grassroots, at national level. And only if countries do what they promote, then we will be able to really tackle those issues. So, yeah, I don't believe too much in the issue of voices. I believe more in the issue of facts and concrete facts of what you do in your own country.
Yeah, that's the key thing that, there is always good plans or nice plans, that things that could be done, but the implementing the plans is really difficult. And in many countries, like in Finland, we have so many plans in different levels, on state level and city level, environmental plans. So many of those, and implementing those is totally different. So that's the key challenge, and how the how can we implement those in a way that it's really effective. And so that's the key challenge. And but how about the So that international relations, like the organizations, is not so big problem, if I understood correctly. But how about the global economy? What kind of role that plays in Bolivia's sustainability, in social and environmental sustainability?
Well, I don't say that international organizations don't have an influence in national economies. No, of course they do. I was more referring on if you can make your voice heard at some level in those international organizations. Yes, you can, but with limits.
Yeah.
Now, what does capitalism is not is something that is currently at the global scale. So no matter how big or small you are affected by this global capitalist economy. So, for example, we have lithium in Bolivia. And the demand for lithium, and which companies have the technology, how you're going to trade that lithium, have to do with this global economy. And that will affect you in some ways, what you're doing. This is something that you cannot avoid. And the only way is, it's one of the most complicated things, because you can do some things at national level, but that will not necessarily mean that you're able to escape from the global capitalist logic. I think the only way to do it is when we have different countries in different parts of the world that are beginning to collaborate among them, and they are moving outside of this logic. But we're not yet. We're very far away from that scenario.
Thanks for that. I totally agree, and I was wrong in, you know, I meant different kind of thing, that yeah, it's really that your voice can be heard in those organizations, but it's the situation in international how they affect in economy is a totally different thing. And so what would be the best ways to tackle social and environmental challenges in Bolivia, and how could that sustainability be improved in Bolivia, and how EU, Western countries, and Western civilians can improve the sustainable development in Bolivia and in other similar developing countries?
Well, I believe that other countries, European countries, should not try to promote their own path of development that has failed. We are in this situation because the path of development that they did has brought us to this climate change chaos. So they are a bad example. And it's difficult to, I think they have to change the logic to see that, oh, we are the ones that have to help these other poor countries. I think they have to recognize that their path of development has to change, that they have to listen more to the South, and they have to try not to impose to the South their ways of living. And that's very important. And from our side, we have to really try to do, for example, our own proposals, like Vivir Bien, proposals that become a reality and that are not only theory or something that is practiced in local indigenous communities. So it's, if we want to tackle sustainability, there has to be a change in both sides.
Thank you. So I think that was really good ending for, and it was really good to have a, to hear about what Western countries can do and what can we also improve and do differently. So thank you for the interview.
No, thank you.